you've ever been to Arlington National Cemetery in Washington, D.C., no doubt you've seen the Tomb of the Unknowns, Unknown Soldiers. It's like a 72-ton monument right there, and it's guarded by the military, 72 tons. There are three unknown soldiers buried, World War I, World War II, and a Korean soldier who were unknown, buried Korean War soldier. And the changing of the guard takes place every half hour in the summer, and you might have seen that. It's quite a process. Or in the winter, every hour, they're changing the guard. And at nighttime, every 2 hours, they change the guard. Every day, 365 days a year, since July 2nd, 1937. Why so much focus on three human beings whose names we don't even know? On lives who are no longer here, and we don't even know what kind of contribution they made in life. We don't know anything about them. Why so much focus on them? And the simple answer is that every human life matters. Those three soldiers are unknown to us, but they're not unknown to God. They're fully known by God. Their identities and their stories are fully known by God. I wonder if you've ever felt unknown or forgotten or dismissed or rejected, insecure. When we feel like this, we need to remember that we're not unknown, that God knows us. He knows us intimately. And that's what we read in verses 1 through 5. Again, you've searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down, and you're familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, Lord, you know it completely. You hem me in behind and before. You lay your hand upon me, and such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. God knows every intimate detail, thought, emotion that we have. He knows our future. He knows what we need before we know what we need. God knows us better than we know ourselves. Listen to these verbs. God, you search me. You know me. You perceive my thoughts. You discern my coming and going. You're familiar with all my ways. You know what I say before I will say it. You hem me in. God knows everything about us. And yet he still wants to bless us. Think about it. He knows the good, the bad, and the ugly about us. The things we want to hide, he knows everything about us and even more, and yet he wants to bless us. And that's what David meant when he said, and you lay your hand upon me. He wasn't saying, hey, don't you dare lay your hands on your brother, or I'll lay my hands on your backside. He's not saying that. He's saying it's a hand of act of blessing. It's what they did in the Old Testament. When an old Israelite would die, he would lay his hands on his children and grandchildren and speak words of blessing to them. May the Lord bless you and keep you. What Abraham did for Isaac and what Isaac did for Jacob and on and on. We've all been hurt. We've all been rejected and ignored. We've all been overlooked and betrayed. We've been disappointed by others and even by family members. And that stings even the most. And experiences like that can make us feel wounded and insecure and insignificant. And we can often revert to our emotional inner middle school child, if you will. You remember being in middle school, feeling all kinds of insecurity walking around? Place yourself back there. And I remember breaking out with some zits on my face, around my chin and my cheek and around. And so I remember just applying all sorts of zit medicine on there. And I woke up in the morning and it broke out in another rash because of the reaction. And I looked like a clown. I had red all around my mouth here like this. I was so embarrassed and insecure that I ate for an entire week in the stairwell of our school, not in the lunchroom. I wanted to hide. And it was during that time that I got demoted to second string on the football team. Okay, third string, but I don't want to belittle myself that much. I got cut from the basketball team in the final round. I didn't even make the school musical. And I was ignored by more than one girl that I liked. I was rejected by my best friends from elementary school because they left me for the group of party friends. And they left me in the dust, and I just felt so alone and insecure, like I didn't matter. So what do we do when we feel like this? Well, we like to hide. We like to hide our thoughts, our feelings, our insecurities. We put on these tough guy masks or whatever, and we suffer silently. And we'd rather hide than risk exposing ourselves to further rejection. And so we just close up on the inside. And when we feel this insignificant, we need to remember, though, that God knows everything about us, and he wants to bless us. He's not forgotten us. He's not rejected us. He knows our stories. He knows our identity. He knows everything, our future. Secondly, when we feel insignificant and we want to run and hide, we need to remember that God pursues us. We can't outrun or outhide God. Have you ever been pursued and chosen and invited into a relationship? Maybe somebody wanted to be your friend. Someone believes in me. Oh, man, someone wants to be my friend. I got invited to the prom. I love this picture, you know, of you open up the thing at Chick-fil-A and you see prom. Is that not classy or what? Guys, get a clue. You know, right there amongst the chicken nuggets, you can invite your, it's a two-for-one deal, you know, you get the chicken and it feels awesome to be pursued. I remember a time during that time in middle school when a high school coach came to the middle school gym and he handpicked me out and said, hey, son, do you want to be on the high school gymnastics team? You talking to me? I couldn't believe it. And so that began a career in gymnastics, which led into diving and whatnot through college. And then I remember being asked by a youth pastor when I was a young college student, if I would, during a year off, would you be willing to teach high school Sunday school class? This youth pastor recognized something in me when I didn't see it myself. I didn't feel qualified. I didn't feel prepared. But he saw something in me. And then I remember going back to Wheaton College where my junior year, my college Spanish professor invited me to breakfast. What? He wanted to invest in me. And I remember then receiving a note when I was a young youth pastor in Salina, Kansas, post-college graduation. And this young woman, she left a note for me on my desk in Salina. After she had been, after our church had hosted she and the music team in our church for a week called Covenant Heart Song, and she left a note for me, and her name was Lynn, and the rest is history. And the note simply said, would you marry me? And I said, all right. No. No, I just said, hey, had a great week, be fun to keep in touch or something, and it gave me so much confidence to be able to, you know, pursue her then. It feels awesome, though, to be noticed and pursued, to be sought out. If no one else pursues you, you got to know that you have the God of this universe, the creator of your soul, the creator of your body and person. He is pursuing you every day. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go to the heavens, you are there. If I make my beds in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me, even darkness will not be dark to you and night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. In other words, God pursues us. He's not mad at us. He's not pursuing us to discipline us. He's mad about us. But if God really knew my thoughts and my doubts and my acts of disobedience and my secret sins, and if God really knew what I was feeling and thinking and how unfaithful I am, then he would certainly be mad at me. That's why he'd pursue me. Listen, God knows all of our flaws and failures and our weaknesses, and yet he still pursues us to be in relationship with us. as the book of Isaiah says, we all like sheep have gone astray. And then Jesus came along hundreds of years later and said, I am the good shepherd, and I'm going to leave my sheep, my 99, to go after the one that strayed away. He got off on the wrong path. He was pursuing the wrong things. I'm going to go look for that one. And we're like that lost sheep. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? And God says, nowhere, because I'm going to chase after you. I'm going to pursue you every day that you have breath. God came to rescue us in Jesus when we were lost and rebellious. And he continues, now that we're in relationship with him, he continues to pursue us every day. Every night. 24 hours a day, he thinks of us and he pursues us because he longs to be in a relationship with us. In verse 10, even your hand will guide me and your right hand will hold me. This word guide means he will direct me. He longs to direct us every day. And the word hold means what it says. He's here to rescue us, to protect us, to comfort us. So when you feel insignificant, remember that you have a God who knows you and a God who pursues you. And then furthermore, God has designed you to be who you are. You might not like who you are much, but God designed you. A little girl was visiting her grandfather and said, Grandpa, did God make you and me? Oh yes, dear. Grandpa was made a long time ago by God. Oh, did God make me too? Yes, dear. God created you a little bit ago, a little while ago. And she thinks for a moment and says, well, God's doing a much better job lately, isn't he? Yep. The truth is, we're all unique. You are unique. You're one of a kind. Long before you were born, God planned you. And you're not a mistake. Instead, God says you're awesome. He said, for you created my inmost being, David said. You knit me together in my mother's womb. And I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are powerful, and I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, and when I was woven together in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed body. Wilbur Nelson wrote in a book called If I Were an Atheist, one of the chapters entitled If I Were a Medical Doctor. He said, think of the human body composed of more than 100 trillion cells. You have 100 trillion cells in you that God knit together, wove together. Think of your skin. While water penetrates your skin outwardly, like when you perspire and sweat, you know, you got to wipe your face off, it cannot penetrate inwardly. And we got to be glad about that, because otherwise, if we're taking a shower today, we would have blown up and exploded, you know? Think of the heart. It weighs less than a pound. It's a real workhorse, he says. On the average, it pumps 100,000 times every day, circulating 2,000 gallons of blood through 60,000 miles of arteries, capillaries, and veins. Our brains are another thing to consider. Our brain has 10 billion nerve cells to record what it sees, hears, and feels. 10 billion nerve cells. The brain's capabilities surpass any man-made computer. And then consider the chromosomes. Did you know that a single microscopic human chromosome contains 20 billion bits of information? 20 billion bits. That would correspond to 500 million words in a book, or in books. If one book had like 300 words per page, that would translate into 2 million pages, and that would be like 4,500 page books. So if you've got lost, it's a lot, all right? One microscopic human chromosome contains as much information as 4,500 page books. We're very complex. We're wonderfully created, and we're functioning organisms that God designed. We're not a mistake. God, your works are too wonderful. I know them full well. So God designed us uniquely. And that's good. You know, I remember being in middle school, and, well, I'll wait on that. God has a purpose for us as a fourth thing, to alleviate the insignificance that we may feel. God has a specific purpose. He designed us perfectly for a specific purpose, and that's what Pastor Abby preached last week. We're God's ambassadors. We represent him. We're here to glorify his name. Represent means we represent him every day in our relationships. We represent Christ. That is our purpose. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be, David writes. How precious to me are your thoughts, God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you. You know, when I was in middle school, I didn't feel real secure as a person. I entered kindergarten as a 4-year-old. I graduated high school as a 17-year-old. I was always the runt or one of the smallest kids. Although I was athletic, I was one of the smallest kids in my class, and I got used as a punching bag sometimes in football practice because, hey, Black, go get the punt returns, all right? You know, I just got killed by those big guys, you know, and so I felt insecure about that, but my body had not yet caught up to my feet. My feet were big, and people said, you got gunboats there, and I never forgot that. I didn't know what a gunboat was, but apparently they're a long boat, you know. You have gunboats for feet, but my body eventually caught up to my feet when I was in high school, and that gymnastics coach invited me on the gymnastics team. Well, they served me well because they gave me good ups, and I could do really high back flips and twists and all this, and then I went into diving in high school and college, and I had good ups off the diving boards. My big feet served me well. I said, thank you, Lord. And I used my big feet to glorify the Lord. Not only in diving, but I then became a coach for several years in Salina and New York and in Indiana. And I used my talent to get into schools where I could minister to kids. All the days are ordained for you. In other words, God has planned these days. He has predetermined these days. He has purposed your days with the gifts that he has given you in the way that he has created you to bring him glory. You're not insignificant. He has a unique plan for each one of you. And it's so specific that there's no one who can better fulfill his plan through you than you, because he's placed you right where you are, in your neighborhood, at your workplace, with your family, with your friends, your sphere of influence. There's no one better to reach the people for his glory than you. And you're alive today for that very purpose. It's a high calling, high significance. Last week I was driving to play tennis on my day off Friday, I believe, and it was, and I was driving by the middle school on the way to Wall Park, and I saw this little kid walking down the block before the middle school, walking by himself with his head down, carrying some books or whatever, and or maybe a backpack, but he looked really insecure and alone. And then I watched him walk across the street, and as kids were waiting outside, he just kind of stood by himself like this. And I wanted to jump out of the car, and I wanted to go give him a hug and invite him for Coke after school, tell him how much he was loved by God. But I didn't do that for obvious reasons. Just think about it. Some guy squealing, running out, giving you a hug, you don't know who he is. I didn't do that. I didn't want to get in trouble. But it made me think that, and it made me do something. It made me pray for the teachers in the middle school and the administrators who have daily the opportunity to influence this student and students like him, to be able to speak into their lives, to invest in them, to change their lives forever. Like that youth pastor changed my life when he said, well, we teach a high school Sunday school class. Or like that high school gymnastics coach did when he said, hey, you have some skill here. Would you join the team? Or like that college professor who said, I see something in you. You want to go out for breakfast and let me speak into your life. Let me disciple you. These guys changed my life. I'm in ministry because of people like that. If we feel this, if I can feel this deeply about a kid I've never seen before, except for last Friday, how much more can a Savior who created us and know us intimately, how much more can he feel that way toward us? And let us know that we are not insignificant. Okay, so you might be thinking, but I'm not a pastor, I'm not a leader, I don't have many gifts. Well, Paul said in 1 Corinthians that I cannot say to the hand, I don't need you. And the head cannot say to the feet, oh, you smelly things, I don't need you. On the contrary, those parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And the parts we think are less honorable, we treat with special honor. And the parts that are unpresentable, we put socks on. No, we're treated with special modesty. You know, for the past 7 or 8 years, I can't remember it was, for not the past, but recent, the Mack College students restored and perfected this 1953 Mercedes-Benz Cabriolet, and they entered it in the Pebble Beach competition. First ever student entered car in this, and they got second in place, or second in their class. You know, I watched a documentary, and they detailed every bolt and every screw and every piece of fabric and every lug nut on the wheel was essential to this groundbreaking achievement, to be the first ever students to ever, you know, win such a prestigious award like this. You know, no dad has ever announced to their family members before a long family trip, hey, kids, well, I can only find 2 of those 5 lug nuts for the rear wheel, but oh well. And we're ready to go. Hop in. We're gonna go. Let's go. No, that'd be ludicrous. Lug nuts are pretty essential to the safety of your family. Verse 23, and the parts that we think are less honorable, we treat with special honor. You might feel like a lug nut, but you are God's lug nut, and he's got a purpose for you. A couple of you are just plain nuts, but no, I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding. So if God knows me and if he pursues me, if he's designed me, then and if he has plans for me, then why do I still feel so pick and insignificant and useless? I've heard this before. I've read Psalm 139 tons of times. Why do I feel incapable and insecure? Because we're placed smack dab in the middle of a sinful world. We have 3 enemies working against us. The sinful world, the world's worldly system that's against God. Second thing is our sinful flesh, and we're tempted by it and whatnot. And the third is Satan and his minions called demons. They want to wreak havoc in our lives, and they want to break fellowship between us and God. Not relationship. They can't do that. We're in relationship with him forever. But fellowship. After David focused on so many blessings that were coming from God to him, it made him think of the lies that prevent these blessings from coming to others, and it turned his heart toward righteous anger toward the evil in the world. And so this psalm takes an abrupt turn at verse 19 when David said, "If only you, God, would slay the wicked away from me. You who are bloodthirsty, they speak of you with evil intent. Your adversaries misuse your name." And as he was kind of launching off his frustration on the evil of the world and the people that bring all this evil and propagate lies that prevent people from living into the truth, then David said, "But you know what? I'm guilty too." He said, "Search me, God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there's any offensive way in me and lead me in the way of everlasting." So David had this humility about him. You know, I'm no better than anyone else. He acknowledged his own weakness and his own complete dependence on God. So what can we do when we know that these truths of our significance to God, if we fall victim to lies of insignificance? Just really quickly, this is what David did. He refocused his thoughts and his mind back on the truth. And that's why he wrote Psalm 139. And he focused so much on who God says he is, you know? Because people were chasing after David to end his life, you know, King Saul and then later on his son Absalom. They're trying to end his life. People hated David for much of his life, this man of God. And so he had to refocus often during his times of discouragement and uselessness. He had to refocus back on God and on the truth. It's what King Asaph, David's worship leader, wrote about in Psalm 73. He said, it seemed to Asaph that, man, all these evil, wicked, arrogant people have the upper hand in life. They're getting blessed all over the place. They're earning money, their lives are comfortable. And meanwhile, all of us righteous people are being persecuted and we're suffering. Where are you, God? What is all this about? And he comes to verse 16. He said, when I tried to understand all this, it troubled me deeply till I entered the sanctuary of God. Then I understood their final destiny. He refocused on the truth. It's what the Apostle Paul did, and he taught us and instructed us to do the same. Do not conform any longer to this world, but be transformed by renewing your mind. Refocus on the truth. Quit focusing on the negative messages that we are telling ourselves or receiving from other people. Focus on the truth of who God says you are. Renew your mind be transformed. And then 2 Corinthians 10, he said, we demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. You know, I get bombarded with thoughts all the time about how I could do this better and that better, and I'm a lousy leader, and how can you pastor a church like this, and why did you say that, and this person criticized you, and you deserve this, and on, you're such a failure, you're so inconsistent, if people could only see you at home rather than on Sunday morning in the pulpit, you know, on and on these thoughts. I get bombarded, and I feel like, man, I just should resign and go paint houses, you know, and I get discouraged. And you do too, because you have an enemy. You have three enemies that are working against you to destroy your relationship with the Lord and his purpose for you. So when we feel insignificant, we need to refocus our minds on the truth. That's why I'm in discipleship with guys who remind me that, hey, no, you're doing a good job, John. Keep it up. That's why I go to Bible studies. That's why we host a life group in our home. That's why I prepare for sermons like this. I have to be in God's Word. I need to be reminded of this. Psalm 139, what God thinks of me on a regular basis, because I'm getting attacked daily, as you are, because that's the nature of our enemies. Then, unlike the unknown soldiers at the tomb in Arlington National Cemetery, we can find significance in knowing that we are known intimately by God. Not only known, he pursues us because he wants to bless us and he wants to be in relationship with us. And he designed us uniquely. Why did he design us uniquely? For what purpose? For his purposes in our lives, to do what we can do better than anyone else. No one else. Anyone else. Let's pray.